not busy with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Bring in the questions. Questions already. Okay, first question. Please explain how to do walking meditation. Thank you. So do that tomorrow. But do it today. Okay, wait. Do that later. Okay, see what else is coming up. How to explain waves of attention and then pain. What does that mean? Waves of attention and then pain. Do you want to clarify that, or you mean working with pain? Yeah, possibly. If there's, I'm just going to take it as working with the unpleasant feeling or pain that arises in the body when you're sitting in meditation. First, is that is obviously normal. When you sit, you know, for any length of time, the body is not used to it. There will be a pain in the body somewhere. My recommendation is that if you're starting out meditating, say beginner meditation, which means anyone doing that for the first 10 years, not to kind of bear it for too long. Just look at the pain and then go back to the breath, if you can. If the pain takes you away from your object of meditation again, I would just change posture and continue watching the breath or focusing on your object of meditation. I think too often people try to grit their teeth and use willpower to overcome the pain. And that doesn't really work. And over time, so what you do is associate the pain with the meditation. And then you're not going to want to sit in meditation for very long. But is pain something that you can work with when the mind is peaceful and you can focus on and use the mindfulness, focus on the pain and use the mindfulness to dissect it, to investigate it. Eventually it does go away, but that takes, you know, a lot of skill, a lot of mindfulness, sharp mindfulness. But you're not quite there yet. I would just recommend people just to kind of play with the boundaries, sit with the pain a little bit, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then change posture. Yeah. Questions or comments? Okay. Oh, personal question. Oh. What has your personal journey been with meditation, Ajahn? Have you noticed your practice change in time? If so, how? Funny or harrowing stories? Must be stories welcome. Yes. I think as the monk, as the teacher, we try not to get into personal stories too much and make it about, you know, a personality or myself. I think what I can relate is that, yes, there are, you know, kind of obviously changes happening. There are benefits to meditation, and the general kind of direction of this, a sense of an increased sense of well-being, an increased sense of clarity, increased sense of just kind of being, you know, content, being in your own skin. That sometimes, like I said, we approach meditation, or we approach the practice of trying to be a better person, a more loving and wise and compassionate beings, which is fine. Or trying to get rid of, you know, the meanness, the stinginess and the cruelty that we see in our mind, the irritation, the anger. And that's also okay, I suppose. But I think through practice that actually, you know, it's not about changing who you are, really. But it's about just being at peace with your personality, being at peace with your strengths and weaknesses. And then those things change by themselves. So it's not, we're not like the driver of change, but just kind of understanding who you are, understand the conditions that come together, understanding, that, you know, you are formed by a certain thing. You know, we all have strengths and weaknesses, and not to make a self out of it, not to be proud with our strength, and not to feel, you know, kind of embarrassed or ashamed or weaknesses. But just by accepting them, these things change by themselves. And through the practice of meditation, it's just the stillness, the clarity of mind, just to see these things. And like the Buddha says, you know, it is through wisdom that change happens. It's not through willpower. It's not through wanting. When you see clearly, you know, there's no problem. Ajahn Chah said, with wisdom, there's no problem. There's no fighting. There's no kind of changing. But with meditation, it is. With anything, it's like a craft. You do have to put in the hours. You do have to put the focus. And what I find from my personal journey is that what you do is you take the instructions from the the meditation masters, some of the teachers, but then you have to make it your own. You know, we all understand that, you know, restlessness, and, you know, when you focus on the mind, thinking comes up, and there are different standard recommendations. But how do you kind of cope with the restlessness in your own mind as they appear? How do you cope with embracing the object, you know, as they appear in your experience? So my always recommendation for people is always, you know, not to be afraid to experiment. Just see what works for yourself. Yeah, not always kind of read the textbooks, kind of guides, and then try to follow that. Because in each and every one of our experiences, it's always slightly different. Yeah, so, you know, do whatever it needs. You know, when you're sleeping, you know, do whatever it needs, whatever it takes to arouse wakefulness. When you feel irritated, annoyed, you know, do whatever it takes to allow that to fade away. And not, yeah, not, and always kind of approach the your obstacles, the hindrances, as a challenge. That's not a personal failure on your part. Do not take anything, you know, and see it as something that comes up. And sometimes, as, you know, kind of hearing these questions answered, you realize that, you know, we all think that, you know, we have a special problem with meditation, with practice. But listening to the questions of others, you'll see that everybody faces different issues, all in their practice, in different ways. Let you know that, yeah, it's just something that comes up, and something that to work through. Yeah, it's not a personal failure on your part because you can't meditate, or, you know, something wrong. No, it's just a natural process of the mind. An untrained mind moves a lot. Untrained mind gets annoyed, gets irritated, becomes unhappy. Yeah, but once you learn to work through it, you find, yeah, it's something that each and every one of us can do. Each and every one of us can meditate. There's no thing as a gifted meditator, and nothing as a bad meditator, really. As long as you learn, as long as you kind of try to rouse wisdom, mindfulness, and just see into the problem, try to solve those problems on your own. Yeah? As long as you understand and know. So it's, I was saying yesterday, it's not about being peaceful. It's about understanding peace feels like. Understanding a distracted mind. What does that feel like? And knowing that. And after a while, the peace happens by itself. Questions or comments? You have to wait for my personal stories in 30 years' time. I'm coming to my biography. How difficult is it to achieve the first jhana? Is it a common achievement for all monks and nuns and lay people who meditate daily? I don't know. We should take a survey. I think, even though I've been trained by Ajahn Brahm for 7 years in Bodhinyana Monastery, I think it's not so helpful to focus... to put too much emphasis on the jhanas. I was just kind of focused more on a broad definition of the still mind, samadhi. Yeah, because sometimes you focus on this jhana thing, and you think, you know, you've been meditating all these years and hours of sitting there, you know, this calluses on your bum, and you still haven't got the first jhana. What's going on? You've been wasting your time. And sometimes it seems like an achievement, but remember, you know, meditating, the practice, it's not about achieving. It's not about getting something. When we approach the practice and we want to get something, then we can never quite get there. You know, in the trade, there's a phrase, you know, the walls of wanting. When you want something, the walls comes up and it blocks you. Exactly what you want is never getting there by reaching out. You know, it's about letting go. So you don't practice meditate to attain, to get rid of anything. Yeah, you meditate just to understand. It's not about getting rid of your anger. It's not about getting the jhanas. Because it's about kind of making peace, about just being in the present moment. just being here. Peace happens as a natural cause. When you're happy, when you're content, when you're at ease. So it's not through grasping or wanting that peace happens. And sometimes we meditate and the mind becomes peaceful and then craving comes up. Yes, oh, I wonder what this is. Is that a nimitta? I'm going to get my first jhana. Wait until I tell Ajahn Brahm about this. And then, you know, the mind starts to shake and the whole thing collapses. Yeah, so it's just about just waiting, watching. And then usually when I do kind of give instructions, meditation, I don't go into too much details because it is a natural process, the mind becoming still, samadhi. And the more details we have, the more books we read, the more we take that into a meditation, the more we start to think and wonder and analyze and compare. And that's not very peaceful. That's not stillness. Yeah, stillness is something that allowing things to settle down. Yeah, so sure we can, you know, read to see where things are going, have a kind of a conceptual understanding of what peace and stillness is. But when it's time to meditate, you know, like Ajahn Chah said, just leave those books outside the door. Yeah, leave your plans and goals, your wanting, just outside the sala. When you come into it, just come with an open mind, with a patient mind. That leads me to the very common question I always get, which one of my Anagarika asked when I was about to leave. Ajahn, you're going to be gone for 2 weeks. Things are going really well. So, any tips? What's the shortcut to getting a good meditation? So it's a shortcut. I mean, I don't have time. I'm busy. I need to be enlightened, and then I write my books. And I said, yes, the only shortcut is just patient, just waiting. The shortcut is gratitude and contentment. Just work on increasing, just feeling happy what you have already. Being happy where you are. And these things happen naturally. When you're happy, the mind opens up. Yeah? And when you want something, it just closes up because it focuses on its goal, its object. Yeah? So we're cultivating this kind of spaciousness of mind, just being aware, being open to accepting all things, to learning the good, the bad, and the ugly. So life is not a focusing, not avoiding, not choosing. But this, you know, confidence, this brightness, this clarity. To understand, to learn from life, to learn from our own mind, learn from our emotions. So, the comment to Chief Rob Monks and Nuns. Yeah, and I said that samadhi is something that increases naturally as we practice. And like I said, whether it's the first jhana, fourth jhana, I wouldn't be too concerned with that, because it does, and I've seen that. Some people, when they meditate, let's say it's the first retreat, they come to it, and they haven't read so much, so there are, you know, no expectations, not too much knowledge, and they sit, and they get into a really deep meditation. Yeah, even the first jhanas, there's amazing bliss and happiness comes up. And then this guy who kind of fluked it, as we say, that he's been looking for that first jhana ever since. It's been 15 years. Every time he comes 10 days, he's like, he's going to get back that. And that's the problem, yeah. That the wanting, the craving, it's just more and more suffering. So we meditate to let go of suffering, yeah. Try to look in the mind. What is it that you want? Let go of that. Peace will come. What is it that you want? Let go of that as well. Yeah? And then peace happens naturally. But anything, it's a common mistake. It's, you know, people meditate, of course, you know. There is, obviously, you know, it's kind of delusion, a sense of self, a sense of wanting that we come. But eventually, when you meditate long enough and you kind of keep hitting to the walls, running to the walls of wanting, eventually, yeah, something clicks. Ah, okay. Maybe I shouldn't have so many goals. Maybe I shouldn't have so many things when I meditate. Maybe just sitting here, watching what arises. And then peace starts to happen. So that's why I always encourage people, after each sitting, just try to feel what peace feels like. Eventually, it leads you in the direction of, of just gratitude and contentment. Just happy just to be here. Happy to be in a room. Happy to be in a quiet place. Happy to be with the body that you have, with the mind that you have. Yeah, it's not a perfect mind, but it's good enough. Yeah. You can still find peace. You can still incline towards peace and stillness. And then as the mind opens up, things happen by themselves. And you understand, okay, yeah. To get to peace, it's more of a letting go, more of just allowing things, allowing peace to come into your mind. Allowing the breath to come to you instead of kind of grasping it, clutching it, thralling it. Because you read somewhere that, you have to keep the breath in mind for 45 minutes, and then you get your nimittas, and then you might get your jhanas. And you sit there and you're going to force my mind on my breath. How long is it? Oh, 15 minutes. I got 30 more minutes to go. You're sitting there, have all these plans. Yeah. But it's more of just sitting, watching the breath, and see what happens. Yeah? Sitting here, being in the present moment, and see what arises. Yeah? So it's always an interesting journey, each and every meditation. Yeah? And it's allowing things to happen, not a doing. Yeah? More just a being. Questions or comments? Dear Ajahn, if possible, could you please tell the meaning of your name? Thank you. Yes, I was ordained in Thailand, Wat Phanantachart. And my teacher at the time was the abbot of Wat Phanantachart, the international monastery in Ubon. I was Ajahn Jayasaro. And before coming to Buddhism, I worked in the finance industry, in the securities business. But because there's so much change in, the ups and downs, and I think there was a global financial crisis happening, there was a devaluation. So Ajahn Jayasaro would call that insecurity business. Oh, you're from insecurity business. Yes. So the name Kema is a synonym for Nibbana, but also means the ultimate security, refuge. Something that you can depend on. And Waro is the highest. So he's giving me a name. He says that now you can have a real secured, secure business, a secure name. So the highest security is aiming for Nibbana. So it's actually a very kind of a very aspirational name, very lofty name to aspire to. Yeah, so it means the highest security. Kema is security, refuge. And Waro is the highest. So that's Kema, Waro. What do the colors of your garments represent, monks and nuns? Good question. I think this is the traditional ochre color that it was commonly found in Thailand. It's called the jackfruit tree. They just chop the bark and then boil it for many hours, and it comes out. And we were washing it every week, every 2 weeks. That's how we get the colored ochre color. Over these days, a lot of it's just chemical dye. And no particular meaning. I think in the Burmese tradition, their robes are a bit more reddish. And that is the color of a common bark, common tree that they have around there. So it's dye. So it's just a traditional dye color. With the bhikkhunis, dark brown. I think it's just more to distinguish the bhikkhus or the bhikkhuni, as far as I can tell. Yeah, that doesn't that way when you walk in the dark, you don't kind of mistake one from the other and get too friendly. Bante! Yeah, so I think that's my understanding. Yeah, the dark one. Okay. Dear Ajahn, I read that Lungpo Mahabua taught that there is something outside of the five khandhas, that there is an aspect of the citta, the knowing that is eternal, undying, etc. Do you have any thoughts on this? Have you heard any of Lungpo Cha's disciples teach something similar? Also, do you have any cool Kuba Ajahn stories you could share with us? I think we should keep this to maybe the last day, and especially at the beginning, want to focus on more of just the practice, focusing on meditation. Yeah, that way we don't get distracted to too many stories. Yeah. So I remember that I can talk about it. But also, I think with anything, it's just more ideas and concepts and words are tricky. You know, you have an experience and you're trying to describe it. You know. And so it sometimes can lead to confusion. So, you know, so-and-so says this, so-and-so says that. And in the end, you never really know. So I find that I don't really take a position on one or the other. I think once you practice, you see for yourself when you get there, whether there's anything outside the five khandhas or whether there's, you know, different things that they talk about. Yeah, because sometimes, you know, they talk about, like, you know, like enlightenment experiences. And it's, you know, obviously it's out of this world. So how to put that into word, how to put that into kind of the conventional language. So it's difficult, especially most of the Thai meditation masters are not kind of big scholar. So, you know, in terms of language capability, it may not be as precise as you have someone who is more scholarly bent to describe their experience. Yeah. Rajan K., will my busy mind ever settle down? I've been meditating for 2 years and it's still very busy. Yes, it will settle down. Come back to me in another 18 years and I will say. And that's the thing, we have such high expectations. With meditation, instead of going for, you know, the 100% that we always think that we are entitled to, go for the 1%. You know, you can be sitting here and the mind's all over the place. But then, you know, sometimes one out of 10 sits, the mind quiets down for just a minute or two, right? And instead of, you know, kind of castigating yourself, criticizing yourself, blaming yourself for being a terrible meditator, you don't look at that aspect. You know, you just focus on that 1 minute that the mind slows down. 1 minute that you're with the breath. You say, wow. Got a minute of peace. Feels great. I can watch my breath for 1 minute when there's like hardly any thoughts. Wow, that's a wonderful experience. And then you celebrate that 1 minute that you had after your 10-day retreat. You got 1 minute of peace. Wow, that's great. Because remember, it's about the training of the mind, the focusing. What you focus on, that grows. So you focus on the 59 minutes of distraction of thoughts. Then you get depressed, you don't want to meditate, you don't want to go to shopping mall, shop, eat, and you get more depressed, right? So it doesn't work that way. What you remember is you just keep remembering that 1 minute. Oh, I know what peace is like now. I know where it is. Because whatever you remember, where you focus on, that grows over time. Yeah, and you keep remembering, keep trying to get back there, just kind of allowing the mind, okay, peace is that way. I know what peace is. Yeah. And you remember, you reinforce it. And next time you meditate, you know, that memory is still in the mind. And the mind will start to kind of find its way back there. Yeah. But if you get up and you just, you know, get annoyed and irritated with your busy mind, then that's what you start thinking. You focus on the busy mind, that starts to grow as well. Yeah. So it's always the act of focusing, what you focus on. And that's why I say the skills that you learn in meditation, the skill that you learn to quiet in the mind, still in the mind, are the same skill that you need to learn to live in the world, to be a happy person. It's what you focus on. You focus on love, inspiration, generosity, positivity. Then that's your world. But you focus on, you know, the violence, injustice, negativity, environmental degradation, that is also your world. Now, obviously, you know, it's not an act of escapism. People accuse, you know, monks and nuns or practitioners. No, we understand that the world is, you know, full of both, positive and negatives. But we also understand the physics of the mind. That what you focus on positive stuff, there's more energy, there's more inspiration. You can be a force of change for the better. But you focus on the negative stuff, then it just gets you down. You're more depressed. And then you can't change for the better. You're not a force of good in the world. So knowing that, we always look for the positive. Knowing that, you always look for the positive in yourself and in others. Yeah? And especially meditation. Just keep focusing on just that, 1 minute, 30 seconds of peace, of stillness, of just contentment. And those things will grow over time. Yeah? Any questions or comments? And it is a very, very gradual path. And sometimes, and it's also a bit tricky because when you're more peaceful, those thoughts that annoyed you are not there anymore. So you don't notice, that how much improvement you make. And you're always because we're so kind of goal-oriented, we're always aiming for the jhanas or whatever, and then you always feel like such a failure because you never quite get there. But I think sometimes a good way to judge your progress, quote-unquote, meditation, is just to see, your relationship with people around you. How does that work? Or just feeling, how you feel throughout the day. Even if you have a terrible sit, sometimes you might not think, because we're such harsh judges of ourselves, we might not think it's all that peaceful. But actually, there's a lot of clarity, a lot of stillness. And you find that there's, the mind has this ability to embrace, to accept life outside of the city. Because I was teaching at Armadale, and we have this lady who comes every Tuesday, very dedicated, comes and sits. And we start chatting one night. She says, you must be been getting really good meditation. You come every single Tuesday that I've been here. She says, no, every time I sit, mind's all over the place. But I come anyway. Because I noticed that my relationship, really, with my daughter, that's not always so easy, that's been improving over the last year. My relationship with people around me, that I have this, the ability just to cope with difficult situation. Even though mind isn't so peaceful, there must be some benefit. So that with that, she does put a lot of effort into the meditation. That even if you can't see it, because we have such high expectations of what a peaceful mind is like, that there are other benefits just sitting still, quietly. Yeah. Questions or comments? Yes.
I do find it interesting that we focus so much on peace, and yet with what you're commenting then with the woman in Armadale, it wasn't the peace that's so much important as in what? The fact that she is now able to see what is arising. What do you think it is?
Well, I think there is a measure of peace, but because we have this idea that, I shouldn't have any thought at all, I should be with the breath, constantly. And then we, like I said, we have these certain ideas of what peace is like. And in actual experience, there is a measure of peace, because when you focus on one thing, the mind just kind of slows down by itself. And when the mind slows down, there's an energy that starts to build up. Yeah. So it's that the energy of the mind is what allows, that brings up a sense of happiness, sense of well-being, and sense of resilience, of being able just to accept the world, accept the difficulties that arises. So you kind of you have a what do you call that? What would be the word for it? Kind of you have more feel in your tank for some reason. You just have that oomph. Sometimes when you're feeling good, things can go wrong, people can say silly things, criticize you, and it doesn't matter, you're still feeling happy. Because there's so much happiness there, happiness inside. Yeah. And then you're having a bad day, and someone says the slightest thing, and you just fall apart. Yeah, because there's not that sense of the core, no sense of happiness inside. Yeah, and meditation kind of nourishes that inner happiness, sense of well-being, that we know that is inside. That's something that cannot be swayed by external conditions. Yeah. And I think that's what meditation nourishes, this inner confidence and ability to, you know, just to be with things. Because when you're sitting and you're watching things move, you know, emotions come up and down, thoughts come and go, craving comes and go, and then there's this kind of intuitive understanding. Yeah, that, you know, these things come and go, and they're not you. And then when you life comes at you with different things, that you can also kind of have that the strength, the ability just to kind of to be still, to learn, to accept, to adapt. Yeah, I think we're living in a very fast-changing world. So they have a word that, you know, the change readiness. When the mind is happy and still, it can just flow with change. You're ready to move. You're not holding on to anything. Holding to the past, the future, holding to a sense of self, or how things should be. But you can flow with events as they come and go. Yeah. And with that, there's an increasing sense of belonging, of connection with life as it arises, life as it moves through. So I think that's as you cultivate meditation, is the thing to focus on. Your ability is just to adapt, your ability just to change with the changing conditions of life. Your ability just to watch the emotion comes and go, watch the praise and the blame, watch the gains and the loss that comes with life. And when we don't change, we don't adapt, we suffer because life changes, situation changes. Life never, you know, changes in the way that we can't anticipate. And when we suffer, we realize, okay, yeah, I must be attaching something. Okay, that's interesting. Questions or comments? Dear Ajahn, what is the present moment? Please help. The present moment, it's just whatever's happening right now. Yeah, whatever's here already. And I try to kind of help people focus on it, you know, to overthink what it is, but just to feel. It's not like a concept. You can't get it through the mind, but it's just kind of made me feel it. Maybe it's a sensation, a feeling in the body. So whatever's happening in your body, in your mind, you're here. In a sense, everything's a present moment, because we can't be outside of that. Everything that's happening to you is the present moment. When you're thinking of the past, you're still in the present moment thinking about the past. Think of the future as the same. You're still in the present moment. You can't get out of the present moment, actually. But we have a conceptual mind. We have a kind of a monkey mind, and that likes to escape and go somewhere else. But in reality, we're always in the present moment, whether we like it or not. There's nowhere else to be. So this kind of ability is just to come home, to stay, and then to move around. Does that make sense? Not question. Okay, maybe we do some walking meditation.
Okay. And how do you walk meditation? I was going to do that tomorrow, but we can do it now.
And there's many different ways, right? So, you can start up with. The traditional is hands right on left, left on right, then right, look down about 2 meters ahead, and you often relax. You don't have to go in slow-mo. I've seen people do that. You don't have to do that. You can walk normal.
Just be aware of the walking sensation.
I was recently in Thailand, and someone did this. Yeah, he kept his own muscles. But there was a meditation master who asked him, how are you walking meditation? He said, the Kilesas are laughing at you when you do that. So they wanted this particular walking meditation, walking fast. That way you just cannot be with it. You can't think too much. It's like marching. So try that, see if it works as well.
Especially in the morning.
Less room for the mind to start kind of drifting away from the body. Other things. But other times, for anything, just to experiment, see what works for yourself. Other times, you find the two kind of thinking too much and walking super slow. I find walking super slow, sometimes it makes you a bit too tense because you can kind of control it and you kind of muscles become kind of more tense when you're walking too slow. Trying to focus the awareness on and then the touching of the feet, the rolling. For myself, I do find it more useful just walking. A lot of times just noticing just the muscle of the leg moving. Just walking, moving. Walking in a relaxed, easy, gentle manner. Not being too tense. Always kind of feeling the body and sending your awareness into the body. The advantage of walking meditation is that it's a change of posture, it brings up energy, especially in kind of early morning or late at night. And you find in a retreat, you sit for many, many hours, the body can be quite a bit sore as well. So it's a way to kind of balance out the energy. And it's great for your digestion as well, for being enough to digest. It's good for your health. And the other thing was that once you get the hang of walking meditation, then you can walk around, still, being peaceful, still have the mindfulness. Because sometimes you sit, and it's very peaceful. Your eyes are closed, you're not moving, very peaceful. But then you get up, and then all the mindfulness goes out the window, because you have to look around and walk. Yeah, but you can walk and cultivate a sense of stillness as you're walking around. Then, as you walk, you take that back to your daily life. You walk in the car, the park, the office. You're not lost in thinking, not lost in planning. You're just you're present. You're in the body. You're not thinking, not planning. And you're walking all the time. So you can incorporate that in your daily life easier than sitting. You change the sitting quiet place and your eyes closed all the time. So walking, we're always walking around. And the pace is, like I said, something that each and every one of you have to kind of work on. Some days, better to work faster, other times, work slower. Yeah? There's not like a one thing that's good for everybody at all times. And you can experiment.
be. And that meditation, it will just be walking back.
You're walking this slower, I guess. I'm not comfortable with the bikunis right here.
No, it's getting worse. Yeah, yeah, soon they wake you up. Make sure you're like,
any questions or comments? Yes?
I have really bad asthma, and sometimes walking normally, even 10 metres, I'm just, that's it. I have no air. I make a joke, I'm going to live longer than anybody because I've had a lot of practice living without air.
Right.
Once I learned how to walk in meditation at a slow pace, but I can actually walk a kilometre.
Okay.
Without having the stress of, you know, that I've had before.
Mm-hmm.
I can't work out why. I'm trying to. I'm walking around to try and understand the difference
mm-hmm.
between normal walking and meditative walking. But when I meditate and walk, I walk further. And that to me is just, you've no idea how happy that makes me.
All right. Well, that's the thing. Just experiment. If it works for you, just you know, do it at a slow pace. Then, yeah, stick with that. And not feel like you have to walk in a certain pace and, you know, walk, you know, live with other people. And also the other one was, which a lot of people don't talk about. It's also the standing meditation. You can also just stand and meditate on the breath or just, you know, standing there. The standing posture is also very good. You feel for some reason, you know, you can't walk very far. Walk until you get tired, then just stand for a while. And just to be with the body, with the different sensations, be with the how much pressure your body is put onto the ground. Yeah. So just, you know, you can do the body sweeping, the top of your head, down to your feet. Yeah. So standing meditation is also another posture that you could use if walking for too long.
Sorry, what do you mean by body sweep?
You just send your awareness from the top of your head and just, you know, can feel different sensations, your forehead, your nose, down to your mouth, down your throat. Just any sensation like around your throat area, you can feel like, you know, the contact points between the collar of your shirt, on your skin, and you move down to your shoulders, you know, what the muscles there feels like, is there tightness, feeling relaxed, feeling the contact point, the friction between the skin and your shirt that you're wearing, you have a shawl on, so it's just any physical sensations that you're aware of in the body, and just do it slowly, moving downward, yeah, and then move it up again. Do that for 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And then if you're, you know, feeling more rested, then you continue walking meditation. Yeah.
Mm.
Yes?
What about the four elements? Can we apply it for walking meditation?
For element.
What elements?
In what way are you just kind of contemplating the four elements when you're walking? Yeah, you can do that as well. You know, sometimes it's more of a contemplation practice. Yeah, instead of kind of a samadhi where it's, you know, focusing on one thing. So when you can contemplate the four elements, when you're walking, just, you know, touching earth, feeling the earth element, feeling the earth element, or when you focus on when you're walking, you're breathing at the same time, so the air element. Yeah, so you can't, you know, contemplate the different ways of the four elements, how that affects your body or around. Mm. Any questions or comments? Yes?
You see statues in Thailand, for example, of the reclining Buddha,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't seem to ever be mentioned meditating in a reclining position in the Theravada tradition. Is that correct or not correct?
That is correct. There are four postures, sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. Yeah. The reclining Buddha is more representing when the Buddha was lying down just before he passed away, before he died. Yeah. But there's also a posture of meditation as well. The reason it's not mentioned so much is that you have to be
pretty careful when you use the lying down meditation, because otherwise there'd be a lot of snoring, especially early morning and late at night. So I recommend people, please, you can use it, but not in the hall, because also in like I said, it's just once you start snoring, obviously you disturb other people. But the thing with lying down meditation is try to adopt a lying posture that you don't sleep in. So you sleep on your back, you will lie on your right side or on the left side to do that, because that way it's telling the body, you know, it's not sleep time, it's meditation time. But also that's one way, you know, when you want to cultivate, you know, awake and awareness, then you lie in a different posture. Otherwise, the other one is you can use the lying meditation as a way to help you go to sleep as well. So before you lie down, getting ready for bed, focus on the breath, or focusing, relaxing different parts of your body. And I find that sometimes you're really tired, had a long day. It's a good way just to kind of go to sleep, very refreshed, very relaxed. So it is also another posture to practice meditation. Yeah. Yes? No, yeah, that's the right hand thing. So that's when he was passing away. They do this, but it's more of an iconic thing. Like people sit in certain ways, but when they make statue, they make it and represent certain things. But whether it's exactly what the Buddha was doing when he was meditating or dying, not sure. Yeah, and I think the hand was kind of represent like being awake. Yeah, you know, being alert, more so. Yeah. But in terms of lying in meditation, you don't have to adopt that posture, lying on the right-hand side with your hands up. You just lie in any way that you feel comfortable. Yeah, your back and your stomach and whatever. Yeah. Questions, comments? Okay, no. Can you tell us about yourself? What was your reason for becoming a monk? I had no choice, I think, basically. It was conditioned. Yeah, I was in, getting on, like, the short end of the story, the short version of it was that most of you probably heard it many times already because I've seen many old faces, that grew up Catholic, not really spiritual, but to just stumble upon Buddhism when a friend of mine was staying in the monastery as a monk. Yeah, and I only wanted to meditate because the monk who was teaching me to meditate, he must knew that I was of a greed character. And he said, when you have good meditation, you can see the future. So that's the only way reason that I wanted to meditate, because I want to see the future. And then, but as you meditate, you discover peace and stillness. Then, so that kind of took over. And my journey to become a monk was only an experiment, like look and see. Yeah, I only wanted to be, not even a monk. I only wanted to stay in a monastery for 1 year and see what happens. Yeah, but then 1 year turned into 5 years, and then turned to 20 years. So that's my journey. So you never know what happens when you go to a retreat. Right? When you stay in a monastery, you think it might be 1 month. Could be a lot longer. Yeah, and I do tell people that, and it's not a particularly unique story. You hear other stories of monks and nuns as well. When it's meant to happen, things just kind of take on a life on its own. And the opposite we also see a lot. People come and, I've sold my house, got rid of my wife and kids. I'm ready to hear I'm Nirvana or bust. 2 weeks later, they leave. I've had enough of you guys. I don't like you guys anymore. Buddhism sucks. I'm off doing something else. Like, yeah, okay. Yeah, so it's not meant to happen. It's not meant to happen either. Yeah, so just kind of be aware of that aspect as well. Honorable Sir, will you tell us how you came to be Buddhist? Indeed, how you became so, what's that? Fired up? Hired up? I think that's the same question as one before, right? Any question, comments? Okay, this question is in relation to reincarnation Buddhism. This teaching of sunyata, or emptiness, says that there's no fixed self, that there's no basic building blocks of matter or eternal mind that can be found. My question is then, what part of us gets reincarnated? Thanks. Yeah, I think it's a perennial question. It's about, you know, we are reborn. What is that that comes back? Certainly not our body doesn't come back. When we die, that's pretty much the end of that. I think, and what I say, it's kind of the, I guess the energy flow. You know, what is it that comes back? It's like when you light a candle, something goes across. Exactly what is that? And usually, you know, the standard explanation is this, the craving, the wanting, that comes back. Yeah. So only the fully enlightened beings, arhat, don't come back because they just don't want anything. Every one of us here come back for a reason, to be with our family, to have a body, to enjoy the five senses again. So that's the reason why we come back. But also, with anything, it's another theory, another concept that we don't have to believe or disbelieve. You can just hold that. And as you practice, your meditation deepens, then you see for yourself, you know, what is it, the craving, and how that works. You have, you know, deepened your meditation, you can remember your past lives, you know, for sure. But until then, yeah, there's no real, you know, scientific explanations that can prove. There are documentaries about, you know, people, you know, coming back and stuff like that. But if you are a cynic, there's not ever enough amount of evidence that will convince you anyway. And it's not so important to regarding your day-to-day life, not so important regarding the practice of meditation. You practice, you realize peace yourself, sense of well-being, sense of connection, and that's enough. And those things will increase over time. And as the mind, you know, becomes more clear, becomes more energetic, you can see more things. And then you can see, and then you know for yourself whether, you know, reincarnation is truth or is it, whether it's just another theory. Yeah. Questions or comments? But it's more about mental energy. It's not a physical thing that comes back, obviously, because you die, the physical part dies. Okay, so it's the same one. Please talk about methods for walking meditation. Done that. Dear Ajahn, I've been practicing breath meditation for many years now, so it's my default for present moment awareness. Sometimes in walking or doing other activities in daily life, my mind will come back to the breath on its own. Should I focus on the breath or on the physical movement of the activity I'm actually doing, which is the more effective or appropriate focus for mindfulness? Sometimes this happens when doing formal walking meditation too. Thank you. Whatever is the clearest for you at that moment. So if you're doing the physical activity, the movement, that's the clearest, then focus on that. But if the mind goes to the breath and that's the clear, you can, you know, aware of each in-breath, aware of each out-breath, and aware of all the sensation in between. Aware of the turn, when you turn from in-breath to out-breath. Then stick with the breathing. Yeah. So whatever is the clearest for you at that time, stay with that one. You need to kind of force the mind in one way or another. Questions or comments? Is that clear? How does one stop the critic hammering away in one's head? Aichi, you're not good at this, are you? Yes, that's kind of the a common issue that all of us have to deal with. And so that brings us to maybe possibly the next, tomorrow's guided meditation, which is metta, this ability just to accept, to embrace, you know, our weaknesses, accept and embrace the weaknesses in others, ability to understand. Because sometimes the critic is, it's kind of expression of ill will, irritation. There are kind of natural forces in the mind. When the Buddha said, unless you're fully enlightened, there are five, you know, hindrances that stops you from having a peaceful mind. There's, you know, sensual desire, which is greed, wanting things to happen, wanting jhanas, wanting peace. The wanting is not so peaceful because you're reaching out something that you don't have already. And the second one is, The ill will, irritation, the critics in the mind, you know, they want to get rid of things, yeah. And so that's knowing that that's normal. We all have a critic in the mind, so not to get annoyed with that. So now, you know, first then you have two problems, right? One is you have the irritation, and then being irritating at your irritation, you have two problems on top. Yeah, so not to worry. No, okay, this is normal. Yeah, this is just, you know, a grumpy mind I have at the moment. Never mind. I want to see what happens. Yeah, so those are the two main obstacles to a peaceful mind. The other ones are doubt, thinking too much, not knowing what to be doing. Third is sleepiness, sloth and torpor. It's just the mind's not that clear. So focusing on the breath, it just goes in somewhere else, a bit of dark, a bit of kind of cloudiness, not knowing where. That's also normal. And then restlessness, mind thinking too much. Yeah, so those are the five kind of obstacles that are in the mind when you're not fully enlightened. So when you're meditating, expect and accept that they will come. Your job is to understand them, to find skillful means to transcend or let them go. Yeah. And but first and foremost is to accept that challenge. It's not failing on your part. It's not your fault. Sometimes we take that as a personal failing, that you're not with the breath the whole time, that something's wrong with you. No, this is it's a common occurrence. It's what you get for free, I tell people. When you want peace and stillness, you have to develop, you have to focus on that. You want energy, you have to focus. Distraction, confusion, irritation, they come knocking on your door. Yeah, so the wholesome states of mind is something we need to cultivate. That's what the Buddha says. It's always about the training, about the focusing, the inclining, developing. Yeah. And what the mind does, goes to its natural state. It goes towards confusions, goes towards irritations and wanting. Yeah. Questions or comments? Yes, Stephen.
Ajahn Mor Bua said that he struggled for many years at the beginning and needed an anchor word. So can you say something about Buddho and whether an anchor word can help somebody that's very restless?
I think it, my personal, it would, but I try to recommend to other people, and my understanding is they usually don't like it, especially for kind of a Western educated meditator. The mind, but there's this conditioning in our society of putting so much faith and trust in the thinking mind. So we want to think our way to nirvana. We want to figure out everything out in the head. And so when I tell people, just do Buddho. Well, I tried that already. It doesn't work out, John. I get really annoyed. I get irritated. And Buddho doesn't mean anything to me anyway. Yeah. So, but if you do have the faith and the trust and the persistence. And just to stick to a mantra. And it's a great way to cut away the thinking mind, the doubting, and all that arises. And it's quite peaceful. But it does. And I tell people also, actually, the irritation that arises is actually not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. That it's meant to cut against your craving. And when you cut against your craving, irritation and annoyance appear. Because that's the defilement doesn't like to be challenged. They want you to continue thinking and think you can figure things out. Yeah. So sometimes a mantra is always, it can be a good thing just to cut away the chattering mind that always thinking, analyzing, judging, all day and all night long. Yeah. So sometimes it's always good. But then, it's true. To do experiments, maybe Buddha doesn't work for you, but other kind of words, other mantra can also have a good effect. I try to recommend people, some people find it useful. It's just a thing. You know, when you're sitting meditating, the mind is a bit restless. Doesn't want to settle down. Just say to yourself, you know, nothing to do, nowhere to go. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Yeah, and just to kind of stay with that. That way we're not kind of bind to this obsessive compulsive need to be getting somewhere, doing something, getting something from the meditation. It's the ability just to kind of be, to rest. Yeah. Other one is just peace. Peace, stillness. Yeah. So anything just brings the mind back to the present moment. Anything that cuts away the obsessive thinking that we get caught into. Because we live in a world that kind of places so much value into the analytical thinking. And it has this value, it has this place, but not all the time. And it's the excessive thinking that comes back to haunt you. I know many intelligent people, and when they get older, because they use their mind a lot, they get, you know, Alzheimer's disease and different things, so they're just kind of worn out, the circuits of the mind, by thinking too much. And that's just kind of the symptom of having a very active mind. The other one is that the thinking mind sometimes only goes in one direction, usually to negativity. You know, this kind of perfection. I'm a perfectionist. In other words, if you're a kind of practitioner, there's no such thing as a perfectionist. There's a fault-finding mind, not being good enough. I always want more things, better. Yeah. So sometimes just a bit of, you know, contentment, a bit of, yeah, this is good enough. Things don't have to be perfect. You're not perfect. The world isn't perfect. But it's still okay. Yeah. So sometimes I tell people, just get focused on that. The mantra is, it's all good. You're good. The world's good. It's all good. Nothing to worry about. It's all good. Meditation is terrible. Still all good. My life is falling apart. It's still all good. Because it is the way it is. It's all good. So I was saying that to another monk, a senior monk who used to train me. And he was just teasing. He's like, I said, oh, what do you want to say? He would say, oh, what do you want from something? I said, no, I'm all good. I said, I'll be the judge of that, whether you're good or not. So that's a joke we had. I'll be the judge of that, you're good or not. But it's all good. Any questions or comments? Yes.
And I find that negative instructions, like what's there not to, actually distract me in that direction. So I thought I'd share in case someone else was facing similar issue with that.
No, it's true. Like to go back to the instruction before, it's a suggestion to see what works or not. And then and it's good that if it doesn't work, then it's which is also good to find a way that resonate, a word that you resonate with.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. And not to be afraid to experiment. Yeah, sure.
Got the intention.
That's right.
But
that's right.
It wasn't working for me.
No, and peace and now is roughly pointing to the same direction, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was working better for me.
That's right, that's right.
Because
that's right.
It was, as you say, where your mind goes, that develops.
That's right.
And if my mind goes into, is there anything to do, or anywhere to go, maybe, whereas peace now, repeated it a few times in my
right.
life, not really that much,
uh-huh.
And it calmed down better.
It is, that's true. It's a pointing towards, yeah, peace, you know, now. You can't get too excited, you can't, not a whole lot, too disturbing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the peace and the now, whatever.
I also find that with mantras, the shorter the better.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just something, one word or two max.
Right. Yes?
This mantras idea,
uh-huh.
I mean, I didn't go
go with nothing to do because I haven't done anything for years, doesn't help. But I thought it was controlling.
Okay.
So
sure.
I'm trying to keep my mind still and not use words. Mm. And now you're saying, no, it's okay, you can use words. So that was a bit confusing.
It's with anything, it's a skillful means. You know, we're all trying to point the same direction. It's that, you know, they're not doing the contentment, but how to get there. And different people relate to different things. If, you know, you're a compulsive doer, then nothing to do, nowhere to go. It's just allow you say, okay, I don't have to do anything. I can just rest. So that was the intention. But peace now, you know, that points just towards the same place of, the, you know, relaxing.
But it sounds like an instruction. It sounds like the mind is trying to control the meditation.
It's not so much controlling, but it's more of a skillful means to point you in the right direction. Yeah, yeah. So it's not so controlling so much, but it's you know, some control, like, you know, focus on this bit. But when you know what instruction is like, it's like, it's just a pointer towards something. And then some people get caught up with, you know, with the science themselves, but it's kind of where it's pointing to. So it's pointing towards, yeah, kind of being peaceful, not moving, not doing. Yeah, so however you kind of work with that, whatever words or ideas that brings you towards that direction. And that's the thing.
Okay,
yeah.
So you can sort of go say that at the beginning.
That's right.
And then stop the word.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
That's
gotcha.
Right. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, sure. Yes?
I had a related question.
Uh-huh.
Just with the. So for me, you know, I understand like open awareness maybe would be a good place to be, but uh-huh. I need some mantras and counting and things along the way.
Mm.
So the question is, do you find, have you, what, I mean, would it be common to find that you generally move towards letting go of these crutches and these tools so you can rest, you know, as time goes on?
You do. And initially, you know, the mantra is just to help slow the mind down. But when the mind slows down, becomes still, then the mantra fades away automatically. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All the object fades away. Yeah, and there's just kind of stillness, and you're there. And yeah, these are, yeah, there are kind of crutches or training wheels. Yeah, to help towards, you know, peace and stillness, emptiness. Yeah. And it's true, it's with instructions, you know, you've been to different retreats, many different ways to approach different perspective on this thing, what's peace, emptiness. And it's each, for each and every one of you to find ways, you know, that you can resonate with. Find ways that brings the mind towards that. Yeah, and just to experiment, do different things. And then, you know, and like in the Tibetan, they go the opposite direction. They kind of instruct you to think, to visualize very fancy, very ornate kind of statues and Buddha rupas. That way you wear out the thinking mind. When you get so worn out that you stop thinking. So it's just different ways, yeah, yeah, different ways. It doesn't work for everybody, but different ways. Yeah. You know, getting the mind just to kind of slow down and be in the present moment. Yeah. Questions or comments? Okay, last question. How does one use meditation to cope with profound loss? Like death of a loved one. Not so much use meditation, but I think the stillness that we're trying to cultivate in meditation helps bring energy into the mind. But also it helps you to see things clearly. You know, that the world, you know, there's life and death happening all around us. You know, leaves fall. New trees sprout. And you see the cycles of life. There's no life without death. Yeah. But also just to see, you know, just to also understand the situation. Yeah, it's never easy, obviously, losing a loved one. But eventually we all do that. We all have to go through the process. So the fact that maybe you have to do it now, maybe there is a learning, something to grow from. And understanding. But also, with any kind of profound experience, just to be with that, not having a kind of idea that, oh, I should grow from this, or I should let go, I should move on. What does it feel for you at this moment of going through, you know, having to experience the loss of a loved one, of a child, a husband, a mother, a father? Yeah. So grief has its own process. You know, you just know where you have to be. Same with meditation. You have to move it along just to be where you are, and things will develop and evolve on its own. Yeah. Grief and loss feels like this at the moment, wherever that may be. And it's just this ability, just to the spaciousness, to learn from life. And sometimes we learn a lot more from the negative experiences that we have, we think we go through. Some people, you know, have life-threatening disease, cancer or something. And actually, you know, their experience is not that of loss, that of depression, but it wakes them up. Because, you know, if you have only 4 months to live, you know, then you wake up, you appreciate each and every day that you have. You think you have 40 years to live, then you just kind of bumble along, go through life, not very aware, awake, not appreciating your loved ones and the moments you have with each other. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, what we think is a tragedy may not be so tragic, actually. It wakes us up, allows us to appreciate life, allows us to appreciate, you know, the moments we have with our loved ones. But they don't last forever. Allows you to appreciate, yes, you know, other loved one in our life. Does that make sense? Questions or comments? Yes.
You hear a lot about focusing on an object in meditation. How much would you say is meditation about just feeling what's happening in your body and your emotions? And
yes, but this is where the language is. But when you feel, then you also have to direct your attention somewhere. So it's a slight focus of something, right? Or just feeling what arises. It varies, and it's something you can experiment with. Like, you know, sometimes you focus on one thing, but other times just kind of open the awareness into whatever arises in the mind as well. Is that what you're talking about? Kind of just being whatever arising.
Yeah.
But that well, you can also say that's, you know, the focus in the present moment, whatever arises in the present moment. And it is. Meditation is kind of both, in a way that sometimes you focus on one thing, but then other times you kind of open the awareness up just to being, you know, different things arising. If thoughts comes up, yeah, being aware of the thoughts. If feelings comes up, just being aware of the feelings or the emotions, and just to be with that as well. Yeah, and it varies. Sometimes I find that, you know, when the mind is more settled, then you can focus on an object. Other times, if the mind has different things that you have to work through, you have some emotional feelings coming through, difficult situation, then it's just to open the awareness and then just to be with what's arising and passing away. So it depends on the situation, the state of mind that you find yourself in. Sometimes, you know, you had a long week and the body's very tense, and just, you know, kind of sit with the body and try to calm that, to soothe it, to relax it. At other times, the mind seems to want to focus on one thing. Yeah. So with meditation, it's always kind of be sensitive to what your mind needs as well. Sometimes when you sit down, you also say, yeah, you know, what should I do today? Is it should I focusing on a specific object? Should I do metta meditation, or should I just be, you know, kind of be aware, open my awareness up to whatever's in the body or the mind, working through different emotional states, if you that needs to attend to. You had a major emotional thing, major kind of going through a divorce, difficult relationship, then to try to be with that. What does that feel like? Yeah, so it is, and there are different types of meditation, different way of training the mind, different way of just being with your body and your mind. Make sense? It is. It's not about kind of escaping. It's not about kind of banging on one thing. Okay, someone says, "Should watch the breath every day. Sit down, just bang away the breath in, breath out, breath in, breath out, breath, and just start counting." No, it's just like, okay, now what do I need to do today? What does my body and the mind feels like it needs to do? Yeah. So this aspect of wisdom, aspect of tuning in, being sensitive to what you need in the present moment. Yeah, and as you practice to become more sensitive, it starts to grow. Get a better feel for what you need, what object is good for you to develop, what mantra is good for today. Some mantras worked great a couple of weeks ago. It starts to lose its edge. Okay, maybe it's time to kind of change it. So it's not kind of an automatic thing that we go into, okay, go meditation, just watch the breath or whatever, half an hour, and then get up and finish. It's always, you know, it's always this kind of experimenting, changing things, working, tuning in. Yeah, so, I've been feeling a bit irritated. Okay, maybe a bit of better meditation will do some good. Or just, yeah. Just maybe just being sitting still and see what arising in the mind. That's what I need in the present. Yeah, so it's always kind of a tuning in, being sensitive, being aware, being awake, and using your innate wisdom to kind of figure things out. Questions or comments? Okay, there's plenty of questions. So it's 9:30. You can continue doing some sitting, walking meditation, or lying down meditation in your own room. Okay, thank you for your contributions.